Simon Sinek talks about a bias between the vision and the operation. And even if it's 51-49 vision operation, you're fine. But if it ever skews to 50-50 or slightly less than 50% vision, then you're only playing a finite game. Your days are numbered. You're in decline. You're not built to last. And ultimately, like, you'll eventually get beat by somebody else that can out-inspire you.
Real business owner.
Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
You want to be an entrepreneur, you want to be successful, don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Real Business Owners Podcast. As always, you got me, Cale Goodman,
and Kilo G,
Trevor Cali,
and T-Unit.
That's right. And then we've got our great friend, our brother, back for another episode. A lot has happened since he's been on our on our podcast.
Still
Jeff Lerner,
yeah.
Welcome, brother.
Oh yeah,
he's still handling
I'm
business.
Stoked to be, hey, what episode is this?
We can't do that anymore.
Well,
because
it's probably
told,
in the 180s, 180 or 190.
Yeah, you can ballpark it though, right?
Yeah, we're like 170s. Oh. We're in the 170s.
Okay.
So they every show before I'm like, welcome back to the episode, and they said pull that.
Yeah.
Because there was like one episode or
but sometimes
something.
Sometimes we got
audio
them, right?
was messed up.
If we've got four in the pipe,
or something ends up being like a two-parter,
or something like that. Like, just don't say that no more. Yeah. So
well,
now
we were
say that no more.
My first time here was episode 17. So you guys have 10x'd.
Right. There we go.
3 years later,
it was September something 2019. September 25th, I think.
Yeah, where our anniversary's coming up here real soon, within like 2 months.
Which is actually really
like
cool.
Yeah.
Because a lot's happened for all of us in 3 years.
Like, dude, yeah.
Right?
I think we've all kind of 10x'd. Like,
yeah.
Dude, Jeff just wrote an amazing book. He's been speaking all over. I've been watching your journey. I know we've been out doing a bunch of stuff, and man, it's just amazing.
You're so humble. You guys have been killing it.
Well,
you've
been
out doing a bunch of stuff.
Just some stuff.
It's just stuff.
Well, dude, here's the thing, though, bro. Like, you always impress me. First of all, because you've always been a brilliant business guy in my life, right? And I got to say this, okay? Like, you've been a really awesome influence, too, because Jeff has built an amazing community, right? It's literally became passionate about helping entrepreneurs and started an academy for entrepreneurs. And I remember when you were just launching Entra and kind of phasing out some of your other projects, which were also really successful, he was like, this is my mission. And he really became 100% committed to the mission. And that meant something to me because I was like, you know, I talk about like why we do accounting and like how I wanted to solve problems for, and I've used my dad's story and all this stuff and like how I want to like, but it was really like a sales pitch for a long time. And then it was like, you know what? We actually need to like really, really, really be committed to the mission. And that really changes the game when your like whole team is like, okay, we're buying into this mission of like really serving the entrepreneur in whatever capacity you do. Ours is accounting. Yours is in marketing and sales and just all the functions of entrepreneurship. But man, that's just been a really good influence too. It's like, man, seeing the results that somebody gets when they fully
when
commit
you just
to the mission.
Fully commit.
Right? And you build values around supporting those missions.
Well, what's cool about doing that too is one person that's ignited in their fire and in their mission and in their purpose has the ability to just light up other people around them, right? All it really takes is just that one human being that makes that uber large commitment, and then the person next to him lights on fire, then that person, and then it spreads exactly like that, like a wildfire, and that's exactly what's happened with Jeff.
This
and
community's
it's not
huge.
By accident.
It's awesome.
It's by an individual that had a burning desire to do something great, and we've had front row tickets, front row seats to it. So it's been pretty cool to watch over the last 3 years. Dude.
So that was a huge influence on me personally. Anyway, I was like, you know, you can't just use your mission as a sales pitch. You actually got to commit to it. You know what I mean? And so
Imagine that, right?
Real commitment. That's what it looks like.
I mean, I'll say this. I really appreciate, you know, the kind sort of regard in this room from you guys, and I appreciate the friendship. And I know that, like, you know, what I've done in the last 3 or 4 years has been, I mean, it's been cool for me to watch, right? Like, it was a big gamble. Like, I'm pretty sure there's some, like, first principles that are going to make this pan out. But, like, you know, I'm betting everything on it. So, it's nice that it worked.
Yeah.
I had probably more to lose if it didn't than anybody else. Everybody else would just like, oh, that sucked. And for me, I'd be like, oh, well, my life's over.
Well, what was the difference between this working and being the uber success that it has versus maybe some of the projects that haven't worked?
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's not even so much the projects that haven't worked. I'm just going to say, it's kind of what you said, Kale. This is actually the first thing in my life that's ever worked on every front. Mm. Because it's the only thing that I make money at it. To be honest, I make way more money at it than I've ever made in my life.
Yeah.
And I was already making, I mean, good money.
Yeah.
You guys did my books. Like, yeah. I don't have to tell you.
Yeah.
But like, this is a whole other level. The influence, the audience, the opportunities to write a book, grow a podcast, build a community, all this stuff. But more than, I mean, I actually just like feel great all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I even felt great when I had COVID. Like I had COVID twice last year and I woke up.
I woke up
every morning and I'm like, physically I feel crappy, but I would rather be me right now with COVID than me 5 years ago feeling better than I do, because it's like, it feels so good. And I'll sort of frame it this way. You know, Simon Sinek talks about the infinite game or the just cause. I don't know if you guys are real into him. I love Simon Sinek stuff, but I actually saw an interview with him this morning that nailed it. It's like, every business has to decide its bias.
Right.
And there's no entrepreneur is completely soulless. No entrepreneur is like, I have no mission. I have no story. I have no goodwill for my fellow man. I even only
if
want
it's,
their money.
Even if it's for ego, there's still a mission and something.
Yeah. I mean, I say none. I mean, I guess maybe like Hitler was an entrepreneur in some technical sense, but like most entrepreneurs are decent humans, right?
Yeah.
But there has to be whether it ever comes to pass or not, you have to get to a place, I believe now that I've done it and I've borne the fruit of it and I feel the feeling of it, you have to actually, and it's a gut check question, right? It's like look in the mirror and say, if it came down to it where I had to do what I do either for money or for people.
Yeah.
And I literally had to give up one or the other. You know, you never actually reach that moment in business because you actually can't do one without the other. But there, you know, Simon Sinek talks about a bias between the vision and the operation. And even if it's 51-49 vision operation, you're fine. But if it ever skews to 50-50 or slightly less than 50% vision, then you're only playing a finite game. Your days are numbered. You're in decline, you're not built to last, and ultimately, like, you'll eventually get beat by somebody else that can out-inspire you.
Right.
And to actually live in that, but the reason I think most entrepreneurs never get to this place, and the reason why I think you guys have probably experienced this, you go through these transformations as a function of pain, as a function of catharsis and loss and failure and struggle and existential crisis and, like, all the stuff that builds up to it, that was true for me, too, of, like, this wasn't just a thing I woke up one day. It was like, okay, I've been okay, but now I'm going to be better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was like, I woke up one day and was like, I feel like death. Everything is terrible. And, you know, we trump it up in our minds. And it wasn't like financially. Like, previous crises had been visually more interesting because they looked like crises because they were financial in nature.
Yeah.
This was more like spiritual in nature. Mm. And then I came out of that and was like, okay, I'm actually going to walk the walk every day of service and giving and value and being a force for good in the world and making it more about people. And then I had to prove myself. I actually had to prove to myself that I meant it. And that's why at the time that I came in last time I was here, I was just coming off a year, if you guys will remember.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys have done a lot of this too, you just give and you ask for nothing in return.
Right.
Yep. And you don't just do it once for show. You do it so many times that it starts to become ridiculous and to get to that point where you know that it doesn't actually make sense financially. Mm. And therefore you've proven to yourself that the only reason you're doing it is because you actually care. Like, and at this point, like your friends, your peers, your spouse, your family, they're probably all going like, when are you going to charge money? Why do you keep doing this? Why, like, when are you going to make this into a business? But at that point you've proven to yourself, I am actually doing this to help people. I'm finally, for the first time in my life, beyond my own ability to doubt myself, living in my mission and my purpose.
Yeah.
Now I can start a business.
Yeah.
And that's why this has gone so well.
That's amazing.
And it's terrifying.
Like, I just want
everybody. Podcast over. That's all you need.
No, it's not over. It's not over. I know. I got more shit to listen to. Okay. And I said this when you came and spoke at our mastermind. I just love hearing you speak because your ability. This is one thing that I. So when you look at people and you say, why do I admire that person, right? Everybody has different traits. Like somebody could admire David Goggins because his athletic ability, maybe not his education level or the way he articulates things or whatever it is. One of the most challenging things I think for human beings is to clearly articulate the exact thing that's going on in their brain in the exact same way that it's going on in their brain. Right? Because I know for me, even early on, and I'm still getting better with this and learning how to articulate a thought exactly as is versus having an awesome thought. And then when you start speaking, you're like, fuck, that didn't come out the way. It sounded so cool in my mind. But every single time that I listen to Jeff speak, one, I gain knowledge and I can just get lost in it because right. I just love the way that you articulate things and the way that you explain things. And I would say his experience has probably helped that. You know, what would you credit your ability to be able to do that? Because I believe that that is a talent. And secondly, it's a talent that requires work to get to the level that you're at right now in terms of being able to convey a message to the world because you're continuing to get better at it.
Yeah.
And that's very impressive to me.
No, I appreciate that a lot, especially honestly coming from you, Trevor, because I feel a lot the same way about you and you're a very verbally skilled person. But I mean, the answer is just reps. Like,
yeah.
You know, I mean, you guys remember when I started this and it's fun. I mean, the nice thing about doing this on the internet is like, it's all there. All documented, right? You can go back. I can go back to my Facebook page and my YouTube channel and pull up my videos from September 2018 when I started this crusade. And I was not nearly the, you know,
same individual,
same person. Yeah. I was, I mean, it's like going back, you know, I don't know how to compare myself to great figures, but like if I'm Cicero now, I was like the stable boy then. Like it's fun to see the arc, but also count the videos.
Yeah.
You know, I shot 1,000, I guess I repurposed them, but I probably created 500 unique pieces of loosely organized extemporaneous content ranging from 5 to 45 minutes of me speaking to the eye of a camera. Mm. I probably did that 500 times in my first year.
Yeah.
Where I would have an idea, I would roughly sketch out a thought, and then I would force myself. And I had the rule that it was getting published. No matter how good or bad it came out, I was publishing that because
so you were putting that extra layer of pressure because it's going out, perform.
Because that's part of the skill itself. Part of the skill, there's a very big difference between being able to articulate yourself and being able to articulate yourself
with the pressure
with somebody watching. And then the next level is being able to articulate yourself knowing that future people that you won't know are watching will be watching, right? And then it's like all the mind layers you have to kind of work through. And so I put that pressure on myself hundreds and hundreds of times. And at this point, I've probably done it, I don't know. I mean, my Instagram has like 2,700 pieces of content on it at this point. I mean, I just force myself to speak my truth more in a month than most people do in a lifetime. Mm. And all the marbles at this point have fallen out of my mouth. But even, I would say that it actually sources prior to that because I spent 10 years as a jazz musician. And the nice thing about jazz is the sonic equivalent of speaking, like public speaking, right? Mm-hmm. Where you have certain knowns, you have form, you have rhythm, you know, time signature, rhythm, you know, tempo, you have chord changes for a song, you have a known melody, but then somebody's like, okay, here, play this. And it could be freaking Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, Yankee Doodle, but give it to a competent jazz player and they're going to reharmonize it and they're going to ornament the melody and they're going to do crazy stuff with it that literally creates a unique moment in time that could never exist again. And I did that professionally for 10 years with sound. And so I'll tell you, probably the origin of my ability as a speaker, and I'm willing to bet this book has never been credited as the source for public speaking competence because it wasn't written in that regard, but it's a book called Effortless Mastery by Kenny Werner, who was a jazz pianist.
And I read it back when I was a jazz musician, and you know, jazz players talk about, just like athletes, just like anybody, you talk about getting in that zone where the music is, you're not really trying to create the music, you're trying to get out of the way, so the you're just a vessel conduit that channels music from God to keys, you know? And this book, Effortless Mastery, I mean, dude, musicians, we get in some weird stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like, I sat there for, like, hours. I mean, I know this is on audio, you can't see this, but, like, for hours, just doing this, trying to play a perfect middle C. Just over, like, press it. I mean, for hours, partly because you're training your fingers, but you're also training your mind, and you're also changing your relationship with time. Like, so much of people's anxiety and limitations and the ways that they psych themselves out or trip themselves up, it has to do with an anxious relationship with time.
Right.
If you can remove time from your perception, you can do anything well in a moment, right? I remember when I interviewed James Lawrence, the guy, you guys probably know him up north, the Iron Cowboy, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who ran, you know, 101 consecutive triathlons in 101 days.
Yeah.
And he was saying, he was like, dude, I still, you know, on my first triathlon, the first 100 miles or whatever, I still had 14,000 miles to go over the next 3 months. I couldn't think about going 14,000 miles.
Yeah.
I couldn't even think about going a mile. But you know what I could always do? I could always take a perfect step.
Yeah.
But that, to me, that's the same. And he's like, I take a perfect step, and then I take another one, and then I take another one, and then I take another one, and, you know, do that enough times, and I just ran a triathlon, right? Yeah. And then wake up tomorrow and do it again. And I think it's the same way with time. And I think this is a truth for entrepreneurs, because think about, I mean, your guys' show is called Real Business Owners, right? I'm assuming most of the people listening are like these crazy loco people like us that live out on this tightrope without a net of like entrepreneurship. And if you really think about all the times when we get inside of our heads as entrepreneurs and we start to feel that loss of the groove, right? Where things are just getting a little bit wobbly or a little off the tracks, it's always some sort of an like existential overwhelm in regards to time.
Yeah.
Like the bills are going to come due or I haven't delivered the thing yet. Or like, there's always going to be a time element within the conversation that you're having with yourself. And if you can learn to have a really objective, non-emotional relationship with time, you basically can objectify and de-emotionalize your relationship with everything else that happens in time.
So how do you control time if you're really trying to
You let go. You can't control it. You let go of it.
This is reminding me of a crazy conversation I had yesterday with Lisa. Called me from one of our communities, the Apex one, and she's like, I've been praying and you keep showing up in my prayers because I need some help on the money side of our business. And you keep coming up. And I'm like, okay, cool. I don't even really know what she did, right? She was like, she's like, I'll put it to you like
Lisa?
This.
You're talking about Lisa?
Yeah.
I have no idea what she does either. I don't even know.
Well, she's like, I'll put it to you like this.
I was about to say her full name. I'm like, you know her?
Well, it's Lisa Plasky.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, she's like, I knew who you're talking about. I teach entrepreneurs how to let God run their business. And it kind of goes in line with what you're saying about like becoming a vessel to just the whole thing happen. And I'm like, that's so weird. I can relate to that because for the last like year and a half, I've been like, I'm just going to be out in the world and the right things will come, right? Like finding our new CEO and finding the right clients and hiring people. And I went boating the other day with a neighbor and now we're hiring his wife to come in here and she's a badass at what she does.
How's that going?
I'm just like, holy crap. Like, well, she's just going to start it.
No, I don't mean her. I mean, in general, the let go, let God.
It's amazing, dude. It's amazing when you're just like, man, I'm just going to keep putting myself in the world because like, the right people come, the right things show up, the right clients.
That's all I've been doing for the last 4 years.
Yeah. Well, I think you get to a point of swimming against the current so much in business in the early years where you're just like, I'm gonna be successful, you know, and you're fighting
the grind.
the grind, the hustle. You're doing everything that you can to change your life. Right. But the biggest issue that I see is they don't have the perspective that we have. They haven't been in the game long enough. Eventually, when you swim upstream long enough for enough years, it's fucking exhausting.
Yeah.
It gets tiring. And then eventually you kind of let go and say, you know what? Every single time something looked like it was in chaos, everything ended up okay. You know, we didn't die. The business is still here. Mm-hmm. We're still thriving. So eventually, I think it's like a 10-year plus mark or something where eventually you're just like, you know what? I just trust that everything's going to be okay. And then when something bad happens, you look around, you're like, well, however it turns out, it was meant to.
Yeah.
It doesn't appear good right now. Mm-hmm. But this is happening for us in a way that we just don't understand yet. And it'll show face, whether it's in 3 months or 6 months or whatever it is. And I think it's just veterans speaking right now. And we stopped fighting the current. And we now kind of go with the flow in a service mentality, right?
Yeah, I think that's key. There's those first principles that have to underlie the trust. Like not trust isn't blind. Trust isn't, it's fine, it'll work out. Trust is, it's fine, it'll work out as long as I stick to X.
As long
which
as
is
I
service right. or consistency or
discipline or whatever.
Yeah, those things.
I've got to pull these levers over and over that without a doubt, nobody can argue that they will or won't serve me. If I pull this lever, I can tell 100 people this is what I do every day. All 100 people would say, well, yeah, reading's good for you.
Yeah.
Tell me it's not.
Right,
so
right.
I do it every day. So I'm going to pull that lever every day because the day that I started reading and then I turned it into 2 days, then 3 days, and then 3 months, and then six, I'm getting smarter. Like mm-hmm. it is serving me. Is it easy to do every day? Because we get busy and it's sometimes 9:30 at night and I'm tired. I'm like, oh shit, I didn't get my reading in this morning because time, you know, there was a time crunch that gave me anxiety that I had to get to work.
You said earlier, you said, so like how do you reframe your relationship with time? And I sort of gave a flippant answer like, oh, you stop trying to control it. But as we've been talking, I've been realizing there's a zero sum relationship between your focus on time and your ability to trust. That mm-hmm. what you replace time with is trust or faith, we might call it. Like if you have faith, you don't need to track time.
Right.
You already know.
And if you're tracking
happen.
Time, it's revealing to you your lack of faith. Yeah. And actually, as I was thinking that and preparing to say it, I was like, wait, we're either counting the minutes or we're counting on ourselves.
Yeah.
Mm. And then I'm like, because if I really think about when I'm in it, there is no time. But I'm completely enrolled in my own ability and my own common denominator quality of like, I am the connective tissue of every one of these experiences that are playing out in time. And if I've actually done the work on myself and I've actually built the habits and I actually have the discipline and I've actually developed the skills, I should have no fear. Yeah. And if I have fear, then first of all, one of the first signs of fear will be looking at the clock or thinking about the deadline or thinking about the time aspect. And I think that's just a signal that we haven't done the work on ourselves and we need to go back to the drawing, you know, go back to the wood shop, so to speak.
When you're, again, pulling all the right levers, doing all the right things, your confidence level goes up. And as your confidence level goes up, the fear levels go down because you feel as though that you're in a little bit more control of your environment on a day-to-day basis. And that's one thing that we've watched you do really, really well is you say, okay, what serves me? You know, whether it is, you know, breath work or reading or exercise or whatever it is that your daily habits are. You probably have certain things that you do each day that if you don't do it, it kind of throws you off a little bit or you're jet lagged, almost cranky or mm-hmm. whatever you want to put it, right? That high level people or high achievers, high performers, however you want to put it, all of them have some sort of routine, something that they do. It could just be one thing. It could be two. It could be five different things that they depend on every day to kind of plant their flag in that day and say, I'm going to own the day today, right? Mm. And you probably have your daily habits, whatever it is. You can go into those. They're probably ridiculous.
Last week, my morning routine's pretty intense. But last week, so my wife had a hysterectomy. What's today? Wednesday?
Yeah,
Wednesday. Nine days ago,
yeah.
My wife had a hysterectomy. And so in solidarity with her, I said, you know what? I'm going to take a week off from the gym because she can't go to the gym. And I know it'll just be like rubbing salt in the wound if I go to the gym. So for the first time since June of 2016, we both took a week off from the gym. And by the end of the week, not even a full week, by Sunday, we were both so, whatever the equivalent of hangry is, that's like wangry, like workout deprived and angry or something. We were both so wangry at each other.
We just coined a phrase on the show.
We're like, we got to go to the gym. And bear in mind, she had her uterus cut out 6 days prior.
Mm-hmm. And it's easier to go to the gym than live like this and feel seriously, the way that I feel.
So we go to the gym, and I'm like, babe, I'm like, look, I'll just do what you do, all right? We'll just get on the Stairmaster. We'll just slowly plot, like a level one, like the warm-up pace, right? It's like painfully slow, like you're in slow-mo. She freaking busts out 200 flights of stairs with like, I mean, I'm probably gonna get some hate for saying this, but like she has like incision, like loose, not totally healed incisions on her abdomen and stuff. Yeah. And then I'm like, I'm just keeping up with her and she keeps like slowly nudging up the thing. But it was that, it was like you said, it was like I had been deprived of, and it really forced me to evaluate, like, what is it about the gym? And it's not the exercise. I mean, okay, that's good, but like a week without it I hadn't physiologically deteriorated.
You're not
400
pounds now.
But mentally, I was like, I had lost my kryptonite or whatever the inverse of kryptonite is, right? My
your superpower.
Nuclear fissile material, yeah. And I mean, my morning routine, I am, and it's in my book, like I am such a creature of habit because I have gotten to know, in my 43 years of life, I have gotten to know the disciplined version of Jeff and the piece of shit, degenerate, fuck up little bitch, Jeff.
And he can say that now because he's on the other side.
It just makes me want to throw up in my mouth so that I can spit it on his face. Yeah. And I like the disciplined guy better. Like, he's a lot more effective. And so it's like, but you have to kind of, I think when you're talking about that experience, and this is probably really like useful perspective depending where people are in the entrepreneurial journey. I remember my therapist, Steve, who is actually where I met Kale. And you know, I hope you don't mind me outing you
as the guy
that goes to therapy.
Fully open, fully transparent.
Okay.
It's in my book.
Okay, perfect. So anyway, we met it through this therapist, Steve. He gave me a book once called Meeting the Shadow. And it's like essays from like, you know, Fromm and Jung and Edgar Allan Poe and like some is like fiction writers and some is like psychologists, and it's all about like the dark side of human of ourselves, right? Yeah. That part that we don't talk about, right? Yeah. And I think that for an entrepreneur, there's a lot of power in actually getting to know your dark side.
Tapping into it.
Yeah. And like partly so you can be disgusted by it, and partly so you can find that kind of sick energy that it has, right? That like you can tap into in moderation, but you can't live there or it'll consume you.
And
I think one of the things that I have going for me is that I've been to dark enough places and spent enough time there that I know how to derive some strength from that, and also I really don't like, I know how to not go back there, you know. And that's kind of what I'm being a little bit flippant about like the piece of shit version of Jeff, but like I know how he, I know what 1% of that feels like, so I can nip into the bud early.
Well, Absolutely.
Hyper awareness. Yeah, you know, you've developed it.
Yeah, well, yeah,
but I think as entrepreneurs, especially in the modern world with social media, we actually want to pretend like that version doesn't exist or those experiences don't exist. And I would suggest that not only should they exist and should you,
I think they're
embrace
the catalyst
them,
to the big achievements of your entire life.
Exactly. And don't have shame around them. Right. To some degree, even let them be seen.
Yeah, yeah. That's the hard part for people. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like not having some sort of shame when you tap into that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh man,
I mean, did this or that. And a lot of people would, you know, when you buy the book, Unlock Your Potential, that's a little plug for Jeff.
Thank you.
Definitely buy the book because as you could tell, you know, there's plenty of stuff.
Yeah, I bought it, and then he showed up with a copy today. I'm like, sweet,
but
I
there's,
got two.
You know, just listening to him, you could tell that special. You're like, okay, I need to get in this dude's mind a little bit more. But here's the deal, and this is something that I want people to understand: is they might read his morning routine or somebody that's a high achiever and what they do to start their day, and you look at it and say, that just looks so grueling and so painful. Like, how could you keep up with that? It's because the pain of where he has been was greater. He would rather go through the pain of waking up early and doing all these things than live in that pain that he exited from by doing all of these things. Mm-hmm. And then eventually you do all of these things for a long enough period of time and a consistent enough period of time. It's really not that hard to do. You actually depend on the design that you've built in order to feel good. And if you don't honor the design when you're 6 months in and you miss a day, your whole axis is just thrown off and you're just not the same individual. And so what is difficult initially to start ends up being the thing that makes your life easier long term. It's easier for me to get up and run my routine and go through that than sleep in and then wake up and get in the shower and just try to start my day.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to think tonight what my day looks like tomorrow in turn. Am I going to exercise or am I not? Am I going to read or am I? It's already designed out. Therefore, I use less mental energy on a day-to-day basis because my day is already designed.
Dude, that's so it. Not having to make decisions. I talk a lot about that in my book. It's just like one of the general success principles of life is just reducing the number of decisions that you have to make in real time.
Right.
Make decisions. It's great. Like every moment should have already been decided. Not that it was never decided, but you don't want to be deciding it while you're living it. You want to have decided it like 3 years ago when you set
when
up your
schedule. When you're in a logical perspective and you're calling yourself out on your own bullshit and saying, logically, what can I do to move the needle for me? And for me, it was, okay, finances, those are good. I was always pretty fit. But at the same time, I started asking myself, what makes me feel good in my body and my mind most often? And then I was getting truthful and I said, every time I do exercise and I get done, I always feel good. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't I start my day that way? And why wouldn't I end my day that way? If 100% of the times that I move my body, I feel good in it. And I feel clearer in my mind. Logically, it makes sense to start and end my day with some form of movement so that I can feel good just being me and living in this flesh vehicle that
it's
I've got.
Like, it's kind of like the choose your hard stuff that you always hear, the sayings, you know what I mean? But if we're being completely honest, like there's always part of us, right, that's like wired to want to be lazy.
Yeah.
You know, and there's part of us that's wired to not want to be lazy. And like the reason that people don't find that is because they continue to just be sold on like the comforts, right? Like, I don't want to do that, you know? And so they just stay in the lazy mode, you know? And until you actually like commit and you're like, and you feel like the benefits of being like, okay, no, I'm going to do it, even though I don't want to do it. I'm not going to be sold the comforts. I'm going to be sold the hard stuff that's really going to make my life easier. Until you've actually done it long enough, it's just, you can't tell somebody that.
Well, initially it does get harder.
They have to do it themselves.
Initially it does get harder because it's unfamiliar. It's not necessarily that it's hard. It's just completely unfamiliar. You're doing something so new and so different that it feels like you're going uphill for a while, right? When you're starting to design your life and build out these routines.
Yeah.
And then eventually your body's like, oh, I wake up at 5:30. Well, why don't you wake up at 5:20 naturally then? You know, and so you start programming your body, your mind, designing your life, right? And
well, I think of it
to a whole different level.
Yeah, I mean, I think of it as, you know, first of all, comfort is a drug. And so that resistance, that difficulty that you feel, that's just detox. You're detoxing comfort.
Right.
And when you said choose your hard, you know, one of the things I talk a lot about in the book is people have, I think, a very dysfunctional relationship with stress, meaning they want less of it. They think it's bad.
Right.
And I am a big believer that stress, I mean, if you look at biology, you look at the environment, literally nothing grows without stress. All growth is adaptation to stress.
Right.
So the question isn't stress yes or stress no. I think the question is stress of my choosing or stress that is thrust upon me because of choices I did or didn't make.
Right.
And that's actually the only thing in life. And I think when you start to accept that and you also realize comfort is a drug and that there's going to inevitably be some period, just like if, you know, if I took your phones away for 2 weeks, there would be discomfort there.
Right.
And then you'd probably feel free as a
But remember like 20 years ago when we didn't have phones, were you walking around feeling like I'm so uncomfortable because I don't have this digital phone computer hybrid thing?
It was a normal ass day.
That was a normal day. But now that you've had it, and we all have dopamine, you know, loop relationships with our phone. If I take it away, you're going to go through some discomfort. When you realize that in the modern world, comfort is just like a phone. It's this thing that we have a dopamine relationship with, and you're going to have to suffer. That doesn't mean that something has intrinsically gone bad or negative because you're feeling discomfort around it. It just means you're detoxing.
You're in a dopamine deficit, really, to a certain extent.
You totally are.
And that's exactly what probably happened when you weren't working out. Is those that dopamine and that serotonin wasn't hitting in
the
morning,
totally,
and then you were in a dopamine deficit,
but also,
and then you felt the lag.
That's true, but I also think that, you know, you talked about the feeling when you're at the gym.
Yeah.
Like,
I actually think you talk about how it feels good to move your body. Why is it that somebody that hasn't worked out, you get them in the gym, and while they're working out, they're like, this is so miserable. It hurts. Yeah. But then, like, we're in the gym, and we're like, I love the pump. I love it. Feels good.
An extra rep because of the burn. Yeah.
Is it something, are we fun? Are we, like, biochemically different from them? No, we've just developed a different relationship with that sensation, and relationships happen in environmental context. The problem is they have such a physically pleasurable relationship with being sedentary that the variety feels uncomfortable. We have a physically pleasurable relationship with movement and pressure. And then actually I start to hurt if I hold too still for too long. Right. And so it's, to me, it's no different than, have you ever, I know you guys both obviously have really intelligent relationships with your body. If you don't eat sugar for like 90 days and then you go eat a donut,
and
you feel like
hurts.
Shit.
Yeah.
It hurts. It
literally
doesn't
sick
taste
to your stomach.
Yeah. And also you'll take like a sip of like lightly sweetened tea and it'll taste sweet. You can actually taste the sugar because you've kicked the sugar.
Or
addiction.
If you eat clean and then you go have something nasty, you could taste like preservatives.
Oh yeah.
You're like, wait a minute. I used to eat this all the time.
It tastes like petroleum different. Or something. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Poison. That is a healthy person. That is actually the state of being a healthy person. So if you think working out is painful, that is a clue. That is the same as thinking that McDonald's tastes good.
Well, what would be
you have
more
an
painful,
unhealthy
the
relationship?
50 or 60 that's 250 pounds or 300 pounds on the verge of a heart attack. That seems like more of a painful scenario. I would rather not live in that scenario and rather be an hour at the gym
and
or 2 hours at the
and
gym.
And listen, you know, I have a unique vantage point. Okay, I run one of, if not maybe the largest platform community of entrepreneurs.
Yeah, I would say so.
I mean, we're at almost 260,000 paying enrolled students, right? So I have a really nice vantage point. And I can say some things as like almost like absolute truths that might be a little bit, you know, haughty or superior. Like, who does that guy think he is speaking like his truth? Well, I have 260,000 examples to draw from, okay? I'm like a freaking scientist of entrepreneurship, habits, discipline, lifestyle, choices, and so forth. And I will tell you, this may sound bad, I can size somebody up as an entrepreneur from 100 yards away by looking at their body.
Yeah.
Suck on that. That's a fact that nobody wants to hear.
And I've heard other like super, super high level people say that. They say there's certain people that walk into a room, they either have it or they don't. And I can usually tell within about 10 to 15 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it's movement. And I like, look, like we're not extreme black and white speakers or thinkers. Like there's exceptions and you know, whatever.
There's always
and
the exception.
You can get
rule.
To, but you are not going to have a fundamentally different relationship with your body, the fuel cell, the machinery, the, like you said, the flesh vehicle that you, this is the one thing you have to make impact in the world. And you're going to try to tell me that you have a dysfunctional relationship with it, but you're just like so awesome in your business and you take great care of your customers.
Yeah.
Well, you love them more than you love yourself. No, you can't give for another what you don't have for yourself. And your lack of self-love, as demonstrated by your lack of self-care, is showing up in your business. It's cannibalizing your business. And it's making you literally delusional to the extent that you deny that that's happening.
Right.
I've been on this weird kick lately where I've been telling people the better version of you has all the answers that you're looking for. Right? Like if you legit double down, triple down on becoming the best version of you, you're going to be a better husband because you're better. You're going to be a better father because you're better. You're going to be a better businessman because you're better.
Yeah.
So the better version of self has the answers that the version of you today seek. The problem is you're not willing to put in the work and go through the temporary discomfort or the detox phase, or so to speak, that we talked about of starting to actually execute on this thing. And I'm telling you right now, you literally have to like plant your flag and say, I am going to live differently and go against the grain, like pushing up against the old version of yourself. And a lot of people think that you're fucking going crazy.
Yeah. So I'm going to
talk about that.
I'm going to change somebody's life here with, I'm a big fan, bordering on almost like a tick, like an OCD quirk of like, I have to know the origins of words.
Like, I have to understand the etymology of words.
Yeah. You're great at that. Now I know why.
Well, no, dude, I have to look it up. And you know, one of the words, there's a few word origins that have changed my life. One is that the word nice actually comes from the Old English word for dumb. So don't be too nice. That one's fun. But no, I'll tell you one that'll really rock your world is the word weird. The word weird. Did you guys ever read the book Dune growing up? The sci-fi book, Frank Herbert? So and as soon as I read this, I was like, oh, that explains that. In the book, Frank Herbert writes about these people that are born with what are called the weirding ways.
Yeah.
This one has the weirding ways. It's kind of like a Jedi.
And
what it means is they can see and they can alter the future. Mm-hmm. The origin of the word weird is the ability to control one's destiny.
I love that.
As I understood that, okay, then I realized that validated for me in like a literal sense, this feeling that I'd always had, that the enemy of my potential is not wanting to stand out, be different, and basically worrying what other people think.
Yeah.
That actually is when you unleash your weird, you get control of your future.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest, the most crippling, debilitating reality for most people is their obsession with being accepted by other people.
I agree with that.
So let 100%. Me ask you this. When you started designing your life, did just all the people disappear?
Dude. No, yeah. So, I mean.
Because you were just being weird and you were doing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like I woke up one day and was like, okay, I'm going from totally normal and non, you know, disruptive to super weird and off-putting to everyone. Like it was an evolution.
Was it 0 to 100 from nothing to all the positive habits?
No,
but that's what I want people to understand though. It just starts with the one and then it turns to two and three. It's a natural evolution.
Yeah. And I write about this in the book and I have also an ebook online. It's called, it actually goes by different names, Millionaire Success Path. I talk a lot about this. I mean, for me, there were three parts of my life that had to click in. And frankly, until they're all, it's like a stool, right? Until they were all three supporting the stool really wasn't standing. And it's physical, personal, and professional, right? So physically, I had to have this relationship with my body and my mind, by the way. I mean, the brain is just super cool.
Unique. I only like moving my body mainly to get to the mind.
Totally. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And the body is like, we don't know how the mind works. So we have to use the body to get there, yeah, basically, right?
Exactly.
So it's the physical, but then personal, which is like relationships, thoughtfulness, empathy, completely retraining myself on how to communicate and how to create different feelings in the people that I was around, because I was a spoiled, selfish, only child who just really only knew how to get, not to give. Right. And that's just, you know, I don't know. Well, and so personal and then professional, right? And so there's different defining kind of phases of my life when those phases... When those elements or those different aspects kicked in, right? But I can pinpoint, I can say like, okay, it was, you know, I always like wanted to be fit and I was a chubby kid growing up and I didn't like feeling like a fat kid who got bullied for being fat. So like, I knew I wanted to have health, but when that really fundamentally shifted for me was when my wife's mom moved in with us and spent the last year of her life dying of cancer in our home. And I had to have a front row seat of seeing a human body turn on itself and a beautiful, vibrant, lively person in their 50s waste away before my eyes, that changed me. Wow. And I rebounded from that with a different relationship with my own body, right? And then personally, a lot of stuff I went through with therapy, with Jacqueline, with our kids, like that, there was a phase where that clicked in. And then professionally, when it all kicked in, finally, was actually when I started this crusade for Entre. Because it was what I realized is that most people are trying to get to the money,
yeah,
or the business success or the respect or the job title or the college, like
some sort of prestige.
They think that the professional thing will be the foundation of their life. I actually think the professional thing is not even possible until they've already built the foundation for their life, mm-hmm, in the physical and the personal. And so when we embody these in Entre, we show them as concentric circles, physical, then personal, then professional is the outer ring, right? And for me, the way I got my professional life to all come together was actually to build a routine and a structure that made sure that the physical and the personal were tended to and still created the space and the mechanisms for the professional work to get done. And that happened in fall of 2018. And you ask if people thought I was weird,
they thought I was crazy because I realized the only way that I'm going to be able to reach my goals and live from a place of service and build the kind of business, or at the time it was like start the mission and this crusade that I want to do, plus still be an attentive husband, plus still be an attentive father with four kids. That's four different, that's five different relationships in my home, counting my wife, that I have to nurture as individual relationships, not as just like, oh, I'm home for dinner, so I saw all of them. No, it's, I made time to see each of them and have one-to-one relationships times five, right? Very different than one-to-five relationship times one in the home.
Right.
And so to have time to do all that and take care of my body and get the work done and create all the content and overcome my fear of being seen on camera and becoming an influencer and having people tell me that I'm ugly and to get out of their feed or like whatever, I'm going to have to start getting up really early, right? And I started getting up at 3:30 in the morning. And I sort of established, you know, what Charles Duhigg calls keystone habits. These are the things that are you can use as like the mile markers of your life that, hey, if I'm doing these things, I'm probably doing all the rest of the stuff too. And for me, it's getting up at 3:30. It's going to the gym. It's playing the piano every day. It's creating content. It's
like your water.
Drinking my damn gallon of water, which you can see I'm almost through. And by the way, I have to have this drink by 6 o'clock because I go to bed at 9:30 or 10 and I don't want to be up peeing all night. Like you just, you build a life that has these, you know, structural, I don't know what you call them, hinges, these tiny little hinges that swing these massive doors of success. And, you know, life actually gets really simple if your entire existence is just checking off like 4 to 6 things every day. And everything else just kind of fills in around it, right? And that's all I've been doing for 4 years now. And to, I mean, not to like look at me, but, you know, we have one of the fastest, most audacious, hyper-growth, bootstrapped business success stories I've ever heard of. I mean, I spent $20,000 on a credit card to launch this business that did $100 million in revenue in less than 3 years, like with no debt, no VC. Basically because I was one guy with really, really structured habits.
I tell people all the time now, recently, I've been telling people, I'm like, look, because if I hear someone say, oh, he's weird, she's weird, or they say I'm weird, or, you know, like I have this friend that is popped in my life and all the time, and she's a medium, you know, and she's always like, she's the one that said, hey, you should throw your party at this place. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I literally think you told me that because it's meant to be. And people are like, you're kind of weird. And I'm like, the weirder I get, the more money I make. And I know it's not about making more money, but to me, to say that to somebody is like, well, they can relate to that. You know what I mean? I can be like, well, dude, the weirder I get, the more money I make. And they're like, really?
But here's the hardest thing about that.
Weird too. Is it weird or is it the fact that you stopped caring?
They're the same thing.
Pretty much,
they're
the same. So you're now acting in more of a natural state.
That the synonym for weird is just like self-actualized.
Yeah.
Like if you're fully yourself, you're gonna, because we live in a world that non-expressed, that if you're just yourself, actually, you're gonna seem weird. Because you're not all bottled up.
Expressing what everybody else is expressing so that they have a tribe or a community that they feel like they fit into. But you have to be okay eventually standing outside the tribe or outside of the community in order to develop self. Yes?
Yeah. Well, that's what builds a community too, of the right people in your world,
and
right?
And then you attract people by doing what? Being the best version of yourself and being an example human being. Are you living an example life? Because if you are, you will just be a lighthouse and attract people to you because people need it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think tribalism is literally like another word for like primitive humanity that locks up and destroys human potential. And like, I mean, it's like all the worst things are tribal natures, right? And okay, fine, I get it. For most of human evolution, like what people thought really mattered. You know, I talk about this in the book. Like if the medicine man of the tribe woke up one day and was like, well, you know, I think today I'm gonna be the midwife. And like, I used to cure, you know, dysentery, but today I deliver babies, right? They'd be like, that's not your role. Yeah. That's not your identity. We don't trust you to do either now. Yeah. So get out of the tribe.
Live up to this.
And then you
label.
Go die alone in the woods.
Yeah. You live up to this label or you're not welcome here.
But like, good news. Woohoo. Headline. We don't live in that world anymore. So why? I get it. But biologically, we still have limbic brains. We still have, you know, hippocampuses and amygdala, mostly the amygdala, that's like constantly flooding us with fear every time we feel just like people are looking at us because we're not doing what we're supposed to do. Like, you've got to it's no different than the feeling at the gym. It's the same feeling. Trevor feels the same thing at the gym that Molly, that hasn't lifted a weight in 27 years, feels at the gym. You just have a different relationship and you ascribe different meaning to that feeling. Right. Okay. You have to do the same thing with fear itself. Is fear a signal that you're doing something wrong, or is fear a signal that you're doing something right? What meaning do you attach to it? That'll set you free. And that's basically the difference. Weird people are people that, it's not like we don't feel the discomfort. We just interpret it differently. Yeah.
You know, I've been pronouncing that word wrong for like years because I've been reading it in books, amygdala, right? I've been reading it, brain books, clear back from Steve. Like, the first book he told me to read was The Buddha's Brain, right? And I was like, amygdala, okay, that's the one that screens for fear. Until like literally like a year ago, I heard someone say like amygdala, and I was like, oh, I've been saying that wrong.
I think it's big of you to own that, man. You didn't have to share that.
No, but it's funny because you said it perfectly.
I've read The Brain. Literally, that book, it's called The Brain, three times. And so it talks about that, and it talks about the basal ganglia.
Did I say
that right? Yeah. That's where we've got the habits.
Brain things are hard to pronounce.
Habits are stored right there. Yeah, they
especially
are.
Especially if you don't hear them in reading.
I'm trying to read smart books, but I can't even pronounce the damn words that they're talking about in the smart books.
Yeah, but I hear it. But what's the commonality at this table? Like, I mean, none of us are like in brain medicine. Yeah.
Right.
Why are we studying the brain?
Yeah.
Because it's the controller to your life. It's the key that will unlock everything. And the way for me to get to my brain is, like we've already alluded to, is body movement. 100% of the time that I go on a 10-mile or 15-mile run, my brain is screaming at me 100% of the time I go on runs. And I called myself out earlier this year because I was like, yo, I'm still going to the gym, and I can check that box and say, yeah, I worked out today. But am I really challenging myself? Am I challenging my muscle?
I saw
just
your
moving
38 on 38.
Like stuff like that. Cool. Like, I really want to just go against my mind. I want to put myself in an environment where I know it will turn on me so that I could see it and face it head on.
So I think,
say, we're going forward, whether you like it or not.
I think the common denominator, though, is like, we made a decision. We put ourselves in situations where we said, this isn't okay. I want to do something different, right? Like, I met Jeff in therapy. We meet people at the gym, and like these, we create different environments and connections and, you know, in healthier environments, right? And it's like, you have to be one of those people. Like, somebody that is grown up in a family of alcoholics can be like, well, that's just who we are. We're alcoholics, right? So I'm going to drink and be an alcoholic too. Or we grow up in a situation where we're like, this is not okay. And just like whatever it is, whether it's your health or whether it's your business crumbling, or you have to get to a point where you're like, this isn't okay. I have to make a decision to change. There's got to be something better out there. And we've had to do that, all of us, in these different situations, to be like, you know what? Like, this isn't okay. Like, I'm actually not happy. I've got to make some changes. And then you put yourself in a vulnerable situation to say, okay, I'll hire a therapist and I'll actually trust that the things he's telling me to do are actually going to help me make that change, right? And so why don't people make changes though?
I mean, it's like, I'm confirming something I said earlier. I'm wondering if it's that obvious. Like, why? So yes, I think everybody was like, oh yeah, I need to make this change. Then why don't people make the change?
I believe, and I was going to highlight that after he got done talking. I was going to just say, it's just sad that humans have to get to such a low point naturally by being on cruise control and getting their faces pounded in before they assess and change. Like, you don't have to hit that low to make a change. But unfortunately, we as human beings, as long as everything's okay, we're okay. And then the extreme pain of hitting some lows, whether it's mental stuff or depression or financial lows, whatever the low is, a lot of success stories, that's the foundation, was hitting that low, and then
like,
that was the launching
pad. I've had over 200 interviews on my podcast, and it's true 100% of the time.
But why do we have to do that?
I have a theory on why.
Yeah, I want to hear it.
Because I think the reason people don't make the change is because they're worried about how they look. They're worried about appearances. They're worried about judgment. They're worried about what people think. When people bottom out, when people hit rock bottom, when people fail, when people get, the world caves in on them, it gets the embarrassment and humiliation out of the way.
Yeah.
and it sets
removes
you free.
The ego, maybe.
Yeah, now you're not worried about what people think mm-hmm. because you already look bad.
Right.
And so now you'll make the change.
Yeah.
Why couldn't you make the change before you looked bad? Because you didn't want to look bad and own that you needed to make the change, right? And that I actually think that's the commonality yeah. between why failure leads to growth is the failure gets the humiliation out of the way, gets it over with. So like that's why I'm saying like I believe the greatest superpower for a human being is true detachment from the opinion of others.
Right.
Because then you don't need to fail to change. You'll yeah. just change. Wow. You won't worry about how you
Dude,
look.
I love that. Have you ever read Seth Godin's books?
Mm-hmm.
Like yeah, This yeah. is Marketing.
Yeah.
I talk about like building tribes and all that stuff. It's like you have to get to that point of being weird, not caring what other people think in order to actually like build your following and your surrounding. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's kind of like yeah, going in line with everything we're talking about.
And I think
what's
interesting too is you're like, okay, why do I want to build a tribe?
Yeah.
You know? Because I mean, I think we all agree, like if there were 8 billion people running around completely actualized yeah. and wanting for nothing from anyone, then there'd be no market for anything
that's
because
true.
Everybody would be completely yeah, satisfied and nobody would buy yeah. anything, right?
There's no marketplace.
So then it's like you're going to have, in tribal terms, you're going to have your leaders and followers, right? Or mm-hmm. you'll have your chiefs and your
right?
tribes, right?
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly.
But then like, but why? Is it so that they can get stuck and live in your camp forever?
Is it because there's a fulfillment you get from actually trying to impact these people's lives in a positive
and
way?
And how,
right?
what would be, and this is why I love Entre. This is why I know that I'm doing work that I never have to question, is what is my measure of success? Is it how long they stay with me? Or is it what do they go out and build? In other words, I know that I've succeeded when they actually leave, they outgrow me.
Yeah.
And if they want to stay because we're friends and we've built something cool, that's awesome. But like, I don't want to build a wall around them.
Yeah.
I want to set them free. I want to show right. them what's possible and then have them go out and do it for the next person. And I actually think that's what entrepreneurship is. Entrepreneurship is actually how we rebalance capitalism to be something that instead of being zero sum or shareholder focused or how much can I take from the market, it becomes this way that you can actually build a sustainable life through service that helps edify other people themselves to be able to build sustainable lives through service. It's like, right. maybe I shouldn't say this, but entrepreneurship is like it's like the actual spiritual MLM.
Right.
Because it allows you to do good work in a way that advances other people's lives and also gets you paid.
Yeah.
And then helps them go forward and get paid themselves.
Right.
Because you're filling whatever need, whatever lack, whatever shaped hole they had in their life, you're helping fill yeah. so that they can be whole and go out and live a better life and impact more people and maybe get paid or get paid through some currency, whether it's money or love or,
right.
you know, there's only 3 niches, right? Health, wealth, and relationships. Yeah. So you're just giving them what they need to be able to go out and do better and impact more people.
And there's plenty of people out there that coach people. They say, oh, you want to make money online? Focus on health, wealth, or relationships. Create a course around those well, three
and,
things.
And
because
that's a good thing,
those are
by the way.
I believe that. One, they're all hot topics that everybody wants to improve. And we should be putting information out there that gives people the opportunity to do just that, just as we are right now, mm-hmm. just as you are with Entre, right? You're giving people a perspective shift in their life so that they could see the same problem from a different angle and realize that it's not a problem. If anything, that's the thing that's going to get you where you want to be, right? And really, I believe that when you're talking about, you know, one of the big things is not caring about what other people think. I believe that. But I also believe it's a perspective thing, because if we can look at the same problem from 100 different perspectives, it can all, that same problem can feel different to 100 different people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I think as you, and we talked about it earlier, right? After 10 years or whatever, we stopped fighting because we have a different perspective. You know, we have an evolved perspective, a veteran's perspective on the game, right? And so I that's how I do it. If something's not making sense, I'm like, okay, shift. Put on a different perspective, how many angles can I look at this one problem at and find the perspective that actually makes sense to me and that makes me want to execute or get better because of the issue at hand, right?
Yeah, you know, there's one thing I do want to say, I think, around this idea of like letting go of what people think. First of all, it's hard for people to let go of something without something to replace it with, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, well,
If I don't care what anybody else thinks, does that mean that all that matters is what I think?
Yeah.
That's probably a slippery slope. So what I'm going to suggest is get obsessed with how people feel.
Right.
Forget about what people think.
Right.
But get obsessed with how people feel. Because by the way, as an entrepreneur, the only reason anybody ever spends money is to feel better.
Yeah.
Think about it. Like, could we think of any product or service in the market that anybody has ever bought ever for any reason other than to either lessen a negative feeling or increase a positive feeling?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So if you make that a part of your strategy.
So probably to the extent that you can reduce your focus on what people think and increase not only your attention to, but your skills regarding how you make people feel, or how you, I wouldn't say how you make people feel. I would say how you support people in feeling. You win the game.
Yeah.
And life gets, do that in a framework of really structured, disciplined habits. I guarantee, like, it is impossible. I like one of the things Alex Hormozi says. He says, like, I wanted to construct a life such that given enough time, it would be impossible not to win.
Yeah.
Like, I might not win today.
Yeah.
But let's, using that lens, is it possible to wake up early, go to the gym, develop yourself? I'm using my template, my life structure as a...
Well, it seems to have worked.
General example,
so, yeah,
right?
Please use.
Get up early, go to the gym, eat healthy food, hydrate, have good supplementation, take care of my personal relationships, the few that matter, and not get distracted or drained by the ones that matter less. Nurture myself creatively, have some sort of like an artistic expressive habit that allows me to get that, whatever... human
you get
angst
in the zone
out.
Just in the zone.
Do good, diligent work that is always grounded in how I'm serving other people. Would it be possible for me to live that life 350 plus days a year for 10 years and not win?
Right.
It's like impossible. It's inconceivable
impossible.
That you wouldn't win eventually.
Yeah.
Right. And so like, wouldn't life, people say, I want less stress. Is it the least stressful existence imaginable to be like, here, just do these 7 things every day and you're guaranteed to win eventually?
You don't have to worry about what tomorrow looks like because it's already somewhat predestined or pre-planned.
Totally.
And it actually gives you less anxiety.
And that's all, I think people look at my life and they think it looks so hard. You know what's a lot harder?
The other one.
Everything else. Honestly.
True.
What was it? Winston Churchill, I think, said about democracy. He's like, democracy is the worst form of government, except for everything else we've ever tried.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about my life. It's miserable. Less miserable than all the other misery that comes with thinking I'm smart enough to figure shit out in the moment.
Well, I think what you did is you logically designed something that you knew for a fact was impossible not to win.
Yeah.
And then you focused on one thing, consistency. Mm-hmm. Do it every day, like your life depends on it.
Until.
Yeah.
When? How long? Until.
Yeah. Always.
Growth to the grave,
every
man.
Every day. Every day.
Because, like, what the hell else are we going to do?
I don't know.
That's what I get so frustrated about. I don't want to, start preaching, but, all this other crap that we're running around seeking after, what are we doing?
Yeah. Well, we got to watch that next Netflix show so we can talk about it at the water cooler.
Yeah.
For 3 hours, or whatever.
I had...
We're in the know.
I had Dr. Anna Lemke on my podcast recently. She's she wrote the book on dopamine.
Addiction. Oh, yeah. I wanted to go. I wanted to go watch that.
Psychiatrist.
I freaking can get in.
I saw your story on that.
She runs the addiction clinic at Stanford University, and she's like the world's foremost expert on dopamine. And I mean, just go listen to that.
Yeah.
Like,
just the clip you shared, I was like, whoa.
If you want to. And I'm speaking to, let's call it the average person that doesn't really exist. Therefore, I can't offend them.
Yeah.
So to the average person out there, if you want most of your life to be shown, to be exposed for its ridiculousness, just go listen to Dr. Anna Lemke talk about people running around trying to get dopamine.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, right? The stoic, this is why, we see it in society now. Like there's a move back. Why is everybody into, Jay Shetty? Because he used to be a monk, right? Like, we're actually fascinated by the fact that this dude was a monk.
Right.
Why is everybody, why is Ryan Holiday, consistently one of our best-selling authors? Because he's, a modern stoic. He's, brought this stuff back. Marcus Aurelius and Seneca and all these guys, right? Like,
we get it. At a deep level, we get that most of this stuff is trivial and ridiculous. But again, because we're just too worried about looking weird, we won't let it go. We're like the monkey whose hand is caught in a trap because he's got a banana in his hand, yeah. Only that banana is all the things we're chasing after for dopamine, and it keeps us in the trap. And if we would just let go, and the reason we don't let go is because we're worried about what it'll, you know, all the other people are holding on to the banana, and we're like, we don't want to be the one without the banana.
They're not letting go. Why would I let go?
But you're literally operating, think of the metaphor, you're operating at the level of a monkey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let go of the damn banana and build good habits.
That's literally my mind. So true. No, but my mind, like, you, and if and again, if you're going to design your life, at least commit to a minimum of 3 months so that you have the opportunity to see what it looks like on the other side of extreme discipline. Because I got to the point where I was like, yo, like these David Goggins or these people, like they're not doing this because it's fun. So if you experience extreme pain, I believe the pendulum, just like there's a yes and there's a no, there's a heaven, there's a hell, there's a left and there's a right. It has to even itself out. So if you drive yourself by design into extreme pain, guess what's going to happen? The brain's going to go into overdrive and say, wow, we're experiencing extreme pain. Time to for and, dopamine.
And you boop, haven't, boop, you're boop, telling boop, me you boop, haven't boop, listened to my episode
haven't
with
listened
Dr. Lemke?
To the episode. This was
because
my,
you just expressed neuroscience this, as in fact.
This That's, was a she talks theory about of mine yeah. that I came in and I talked to Trevor, one of our other accountants, his name Trevor. Mm-hmm. And he goes, bro, the way you just described that, I just listened to Andrew Huberman's podcast and he described it basically the same way. And he's a neuroscientist.
Because you experienced it.
But I was sitting there like, why are these people running 50 miles or 100 miles? Like, what's the purpose? And I'm like, they are experiencing an extreme high that none of us have experienced. And that's why they're doing it. The only reason why they're going into the extreme pain is because the pendulum has just as low as that pain goes, that's as high mm-hmm. as the pleasure is on the accomplishment side of getting it done. And I think people need to understand as deep as the pain is, that's as extreme as the pleasure could be on the other side of it if you see it through. Right, it's the quitting.
Yeah, and I think
there's gets in the way of that.
My experience, and if somebody listens to the episode, we get into the actual mathematics, sort of the algebra of what I'm about to say, and there is a point of diminishing returns, so it's not an absolute. But in general, I'll say that there's multiple variables to that equation. Right, there's the acuteness or the let's call it the degree of pain or pleasure, and there's also the time or the interval of pain or pleasure. Right, and so. The nice thing is, degree times interval equals total quantity, right? So it's like, how painful is it and how long does it last equals total amount of pain. How pleasurable is it times how long does it last equals total amount of pleasure. And you can kind of manipulate those variables, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're like, okay, I'm going to put myself through 4 hours or 2 hours or whatever your interval, you control. Again, so much of life is about, is it stress you chose or stress you didn't? If you determine the time interval, you're giving yourself the right out of the gate, the win of controlling your stress, right? And say, okay, it's going to be torture for an hour or 2 hours or 9 hours or whatever.
By my hand though.
But then by my hand, but then when the brain corrects and rebalances, it's not going to take me to the same degree because there's not going to be willpower behind it, right? In other words, I'm pushing myself to pain.
Yes.
I'm not going to push myself to pleasure. The brain's just going to go there naturally. But because it's not going to the same degree, it's going to stay there a whole lot longer. So 2 hours of intense self-directed pain could correlate to 2 weeks of generalized automatic pleasure, right? And think about what most people do. They go after the 2 hours of intense self-directed pleasure, the one night stand at the club or the drugs or the binge or the bender or whatever. And then what's the brain going to do? Two weeks of generalized pain.
And I believe that the dopamine that's being created based upon the phones or whatever it is, the going to the clubs, getting that, I call that artificial dopamine. It's not real. You didn't earn it. You just put yourself in a situation, in other words, the club, and it's there. And then that's designed to do that. It's designed to hit that dopamine so that the drip starts happening. But since it wasn't earned, you're going to experience some form of pain because of that, because the pendulum does have to swing back. The yes has to have a no. The heaven has to have a hell, right?
And it's going
to
last a lot longer.
And I believe it shows up in the form of depression and anxieties and all of these different things. Your brain actually turns on itself because you didn't earn the dopamine, right? Mm. And I believe that that's why depression is at an all-time high. I believe that that's why mental health is at an all-time low in terms of people struggling, is because we're overdosing on artificial dopamine rather than earned dopamine. When you go through the pain process that was by your own hand, the dopamine that comes in is real. Therefore, it's, you can have confidence. Mm-hmm. And if you get the artificial dopamine, the real aspect of the other side is extreme and excruciating mental angst, pain, struggle, anxieties, depression, whatever it is. And I believe that that's why it's on this trail ride straight to the top of the mountain, and people are struggling because we're overdosing on artificial shit rather than earning our shit, right?
Yeah, Freud said that depression is rage turned inward on oneself.
Right.
And I actually have a pretty cool interview with a guy who's a non-diagnosing psychiatrist, and he basically would say that any mental condition is, you know, non-chemical, basically. And Fred Sinclair is his name. And I don't know that I'm ready to go there. I'm not a doctor, but I think I do agree with you. I think a lot of depression in our society is rage turned inward, because we know we're wasting our time and energy going after cheap thrill. Like, we know it.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I think, you know, and I've seen strong evidence of statistical correlation between depression and video games. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people think that video games potentially, and I'm not like super anti-video games. I'm not one of those dogmatic people. You know, I think everything, there's a balance. But I think most people think that relationship is because depressed people seek escapes.
Right.
I actually, my theory is that to some degree, maybe that's true, but it becomes a self-reinforcing equation, because the anger at oneself for knowing that you're seeking an escape in something that is virtual, non-physical, non-real, non-human, non-organic, non-authentic, mm-hmm. and that's a simulation created by other people that are just literally trying to game you, you're so mad at yourself that rage turns inward, and it just deepens the depression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And I think that's that because there's a statistical correlation between those two things. I think it's a useful discussion case for the relationship. But I agree. I think a lot of depression is just being pissed at ourselves and taking it out on ourselves, because we know that we could have gotten the dopamine at the gym, but instead we looked for it at the club.
Yep.
And we're just like mad.
And we said that we would go to the gym too, and we didn't.
Yeah.
And we went to the club instead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's pretty easy to paint a picture too, because we all have examples in our lives. You know what I mean? We all have people that in their 30s or 40s, they were, you know what I mean, spending frivolously, talk about health, wealth, and relationships. They're going through divorces, turning and burning through girls, turning and burning through money. They're turning and burning through, you know, habits, you know, unhealthy habits. And then you see what that is when they're in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. Do you want to be like healthy, playing in world senior games and still having great times right. with people and seeing the world? Or do you want to be pulling around a freaking oxygen tank and barely getting by and like still just feeling sorry for yourself and being this victim that serves you and like, oh my gosh, this is how my life turned out. You know what I mean? And we all have those examples. We already, like you said, we already all know. We know the result, you know? And so right now, most people that probably listen to this show are in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. It's like, those are the choices you're making right now that are going to paint that picture for you in 20, 30 more years, you know? And like, put all the money aside and all that shit. Like, well, actually don't. Like, because honestly, when I'm in my 60s and 70s, I want to be having fun. I want to have enough money to, I know it's going to outlive me. I want to make sure I educate my children to take the baton and actually build a bigger life. And I want to be able to do all those things. And we've already had all those examples, and it's up to you. You know, it's up to you and the choices that you make right now.
Yeah. I love that you have a younger audience. I'm so passionate about really speaking to young people. You know, there's that saying that youth is wasted on the young, right?
Yeah.
And I think if you really try to get to that statement, like, what is it really saying? I think what it's saying is youth is wasted on people that are worried what people think.
Yeah.
Because if there is one handicap for most young people, it's that, I mean, think about it. When we were younger, we worried more what people thought, right?
That's
like Lord of the Flies, like the defining aspect
you're not
of being young. God, if you can be young and detached from the opinions of others, you got this world.
Like,
it's yours.
Well, that's why you could see some 25, 26, 27-year-olds with mega success. And you're just like, what?
And they're, you know what they're, you know what, you know what the, I mean, I've interviewed a few of them. They're weird. And they're, and it kind of goes to the failure thing. Because look, when you fail as an adult, what does it look like? It looks like divorce. It looks like bankruptcy, business failure, maybe an illness. What does failure look like as a kid? It's just getting bullied.
Not
or being, popular, being the weird kid, right? Those are the guys that go out. I say guy, the humans, guys and girls that go out and crush it in their 20s. Same thing.
Yeah.
They got the humiliation out of the way. This is, I believe, what part of why I've been successful.
They were
rejects. I got bullied so bad as a kid. I could never be more humiliated as an adult than I spent my entire childhood being every day at school. So I'm a little less worried probably than the average adult about being scorned and judged you because you assholes were already scorning me when I was a kid.
And you survived it all, though.
I got over it.
Yeah. You have the perspective like that. Really doesn't do anything. That doesn't move the needle for me. Their opinions are nothing.
And flip it.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to see some data on the most popular kids in high school and how their lives turned out. I mean, I know the most popular kid from my high school, and he's, you know, a drug addict, and he's been in prison multiple times, and he's a friend. I mean, if he may even see this, like, I love you, bro, but like, he would tell you if he was at the table, he'd be like, worst thing that ever happened to me was being big man on campus, captain of the football team, dated all the cheerleaders.
Everything came easy.
Big shot as a young person because I was so dependent on what other people thought that I self-destructed as an adult. And the fact that he's actually doing better now with his life because he had to go through that. Yeah. I think you're better off getting it over with as a kid, man.
So true.
Like go to school. Like even if you don't, even if you have 20/20 vision, go buy yourself some Coke bottle lens glasses and show up to school with your pants pulled up like Urkel, get your ass kicked, get yourself bullied, get your humiliation over with so you can actually be a free adult who's not so worried like everybody else is because then you'll be the one that wins.
It's so good.
This is why they say be nice to nerds because you're going to end up working for one day, right?
I know, it's so true. Nick, I already know what we're going to call this podcast episode.
Nick, you said be nice to nerds. He's going over there.
We're going
to
call this.
Over there. He's like, be nice.
I wasn't saying that. I was just saying, Nick, you got to remember we're going to call this episode Weird is the Way with Jeff Lanier. Dude.
Weird is the Way.
I am proud to be associated with that title.
Yeah. I think that'll be a good one.
Bro, I think we were shooting for an hour, and I bet you were at least 1:30.
I have no idea.
I have no idea.
And we need to get on Jeff's podcast very next.
And at the same time, like, that's the thing, though. When you just get into a conversation like this, and it's just so natural, time doesn't exist anymore. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, we just
didn't exist.
Embodied it.
We were just living it. And I think if people are listening, of course they are if they're still here. They're listening to it, but... they can sense that. You can kind of sense when something's really just coming together and clicking.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, every time we get in a room together, it's just
I honestly this is how I feel. I mean, this sensation I'm having with you guys is the same way it feels when I'm doing really great work and I'm out of that experience of time.
Yeah. And that's what people need to understand is you alluded to it, the time thing, and it just disappeared.
But this is why
and we were in it.
But this is why you have to develop mental mastery because if... Like, I remember maybe, I don't know, because I've lost track of time. I have no idea when it was. But at some point, I was like, wait, guys, we still got to do my episode. And like, are we going to run out of time? Like, I had a moment of awareness of time, and it broke me out of the zone. And I was like, no.
I do that too.
I have the mental mastery to go, nope, I need to put that back in the container and put it back on the shelf because it's not going to help me right now. But if you don't have that mental mastery and you let that wheel of worry start spinning in your mind, like, oh, I do have rent due at the end of the month. And oh, I did. My girlfriend is going to ask me if I made a sale today. And like,
you have the mental mastery at your own hand, putting yourself through some form of pain or misery so that you could master your mind.
And you can never do your best work.
Yeah,
because you can never get out of the worry
and in the moment, right?
And like, and it becomes self-reinforcing because in the absence of like here's the hardest, probably the harsh truth: good work isn't good enough.
Yeah,
it has to be an incredible work to matter in this world because it's so crowded. Yeah. There's so much competition. And you're only going to do incredible work.
Incredibly consistent. So incredible. I don't know if you can have incredible without consistent. So maybe just the word incredible.
Well, I think that's what
enough.
Makes it, incredible in, hard to believe is what that word literally means. What makes it hard to believe is the consistency with which it's done. Hmm. You know, anybody can be great for a second, probably. Yeah. I don't know. And so my point is that mental mastery is the precondition for your ability to create the space and sustain it to do the kind of work that's actually going to get you to the life you want.
Amen.
Yeah. That's great.
Guys, make sure that you, how do they find your book? Is it Amazon?
At this point, go on Amazon. I appreciate that.
Or do you want them to go directly to your website or what do you prefer?
If somebody wants to get the book, just go on Amazon, type in Jeff Lerner, Unlock Your Potential.
Yeah.
And if somebody wants to really go deeper with me, the book goes pretty deep, but I also have a YouTube channel where I just give free training. I mean, I think I've posted 900 free training videos on there in the last 4 years. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's plenty of information and content that Jeff puts out. I mean, that's one thing that when you committed to it, well, I guess with anything that Jeff now, that this version of Jeff, when he commits to something, it's 100%. And it's, you don't play around anymore. Like if you're going to create content, you're creating lots of content. If you're going to do this, you're going to do it, right?
I hear
right?
people say, I'm going to create content, and they'll make, we even have a thing in our community called the 90-day challenge. People get to the end of this 90-day challenge. It's like, I shot 90 videos in 90 days, and they're like, it's like, they just arrived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that sounds like a, nice casual warm-up. Like, what now? Like, just the volume of output, developing a completely different standard for volume of output, I think is... I hate to sound like an old fuddy-duddy, but we just live in a really soft time.
Well, you just got to be careful what you call good. And that's what I told somebody one time, because when they wanted to start running, they said they were going to go out and get a mile or two in. I said, don't fucking do that, dude. If your first run, that's the fucking bar. You're setting the bar. Mm-hmm. Be careful where you fucking set the bar, because you run 1 mile, guess what? You're going to think two's fucking good because you set the bar at one. But if you come out of the gate and you push yourself and see what you're about and you hit 4 or 5, you're going to feel like a bitch when you go out and run 2 or 3 because you already have a measuring stick. You already have a bar that you set for yourself. So be careful where you set your bar, because the idea is to continue to push that, right? And if you set the bar so low and you congratulate yourself for beating that old standard that you set, but it was such a low fucking standard that you're really just celebrating another average ass accomplishment, right? So, anywho, again, we could keep going. We're actually going to keep going, and we're going to go onto Jeff's podcast. Jeff, what is your podcast? So that after they get done listening to this, they can go check us out and continue the conversation.
Yeah, I know. Right? Yeah, pretty it's probably going to be a part two.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's my show's got the same title as my book. It's Unlock Your Potential. And it's wherever podcasts are consumed, we'll be there.
Yeah. Cool, man. Dude, you're always a pleasure. And even if we had 0 downloads on this episode, it was fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I think it'll be a great one.
Oh, I guarantee it will be.
Just from the clips that we get out of this. And for some people, it's going to be productive. And some people, it's going to be educational. And for some people, it's going to be really healing. Because this was a healing
and
podcast, man. Because this is literally... Because we've all been through therapy journeys and health challenges and pushed ourselves. And it's some people are just they're looking for that. You know what I mean? And this is really healing for them to start a different trajectory.
What's funny is our first episode 3 years ago was called the real shit is the hard shit. Or the best shit is the hard shit.
Oh, yeah. Right? I think it was.
I literally feel like we actually just had part two.
Yeah, why don't we just do it?
But honestly, but the nice thing is it's consistent. It's bookends after 3 years.
Yeah.
I'm in the same place. I'm living the same schedule. I'm drinking the same gallon of water every day. The only difference is back then my business was doing, a couple $100,000 a month. And, now my business is doing between $5 and $6 million a month. So if I know people they want to make money.
Yeah.
Hear this.
Yeah.
Go listen to that episode. Go listen to this episode and realize it's 3 years. And the fact that they're so similar is why the business is so different.
Mm. Wow.
That's true.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Guys, make sure that you're sharing this podcast, because I guarantee you it's a very impactful one for individuals that are ready.
Yeah.
Right? Because when individuals are ready, they hear the things that they need to hear.
If you're not ready, you just won't find it no matter what you listen to or read, right? And so, guys, make sure you share the show. Please rate and review the show. And please, after you listen to this, go check out Jeff's podcast. Make sure you check out his book, Unlock Your Potential. Guys, as always, kick ass, take names. We'll see you next week.
Peace.